You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 227, Thursday, September 3rd, as this comes out. Recording Wednesday night. Van Burnett joined, as always, by Steve Gisuelli. Welcome to you diehards who are joining us in September. Hopefully your seasons are still well alive. I think last week I marked the end of my all-important home league season, and this week, Steve, I think we go ahead and put a nail in the coffin for both of our seasons, which is ceremonious for the topic tonight. We're talking Labor Day lessons learned. We hope you guys geek out on this as much as we do, because kind of the mission statement of WAF for years in the running has been having some accountability and having a little bit of looking in the rear view and not just taking victory laps, but also looking at things that we might have missed, where we could improve. Hey, but when we get stuff right, we also want to look at that too and see if we can learn year over year. So very fun show. I know Steve, leading up to it, it's a long lead up because all the way back to April 2nd show, episode 208, as we're now on episode 226, we said things all throughout the spring that were, oh, this would be a good show to come back to. We got to look at this later in the year and see how this stuff worked out. And this is the show exactly for that, where we are going to handpick five of our crystal ball episodes from April and early May, and basically talk through what the hits were, what the misses were, and the bigger process learnings are what we might take into next year, either from a managing standpoint or from actually running Wins Above Fantasy as a podcast, Steve, because we might be like, ooh, we got to circle that episode. Can't wait, man. A lot of fun. And now that we're both out, it feels appropriate. So how you doing? How you hanging in?
It's good. I'm still, we were talking a little bit off air. I'm not in like that I miss this yet mode, just because of how frustrating my team was all year. It was great sneaking in and making the playoffs and keeping that streak alive. I think I've made it, you know, every year, but one since like 2014, something like that.
That's a good streak. That's
yeah,
a great streak.
I think I missed it in like 2022. So have a decent
everything
one.
Was going everything yeah. is going against you, so yeah. that's fair. And so, kind of the same for me, dude. We like there's some bad beats, like Juan Soto getting injured, Max Meyer out for the season. Like when you know that it would take kind of a miracle to win it, at that point it's kind of like I'm gonna go down swinging, but put me out of my misery a little bit.
It's actually funny. This is like the best year I've had elsewhere other than my home league. I'm in second in my TGFBI league. Not going to win it because the person in first overall is in my league by like miles. So, you know, that would be a nice finish. I'm close to the money in my NFBC 50 and then two other, you know, smaller home leagues that I do. I'm, in, you know, bouncing back and forth between first and in the Roto league that I do. And then in second in the other head to head like keeper league that I'm in. So, you know, still can have a good overall year. And like the other like 2 days ago, I literally turned off the underdog notifications with like all the lineup posts, you know, like that tweets it out. I'm like, actually, I still need this. Like, you know, I can't just completely check out.
If you're in second, dude. That's impressive. I've landed in seventh purgatory for TGFBI. I think that was one of our New Year's resolutions. So good on you, Steve. Quick thoughts on the topic itself, Steve, and then we probably got about 10 minutes per of the five episodes to just dive in, so it's going to be a speed test for us tonight.
Yeah, that's all right. I think that, if anything, this is less so of us being right or wrong, which is important, but I think it's helped us develop good processes, and like a lot of these episodes are recurring topics because they've worked before, right? I think that's sort of the biggest thing that we take from this. And, you know, we're not going to be 100% on our takes or even close to that, but at least we'll understand what the processes are and, like, you know, why we talk about the guys we talk about when we do early season, you know, observations, and why maybe there's some more signal than noise, at least that's the goal. Right. Yeah. So, if anything, it's a good start to like audit season. You know, this is like the tax season of WAF, right? We'll go through our chalkboard picks and all that as the season comes to a wrap here. But we do come at throughout the year, like you say, for a lot of episodes and say, oh, we got to come back. We got to come back and see how we did with this. We'll check in on these calls. So be true to our word here, which is good.
Yeah, I like it. I think it was maybe our first year or two, as we're now in like year six, that we would say that a lot and never actually do it other than the chalkboard episode. So it's nice that we're holding true to it. But
and it's also hard because there's so much stuff to talk about, right? Like the content sort of, or the ideas sort of make themselves, not like too hard to think of topics each week, and we're not a daily show, so a lot of things go on and there's a lot of stuff to talk about as well. But yeah, it's good to come back to the episodes that we're
totally
saying.
Fair and it sometimes it takes three years in a row of saying every April we got to come back to this before you wake up to the reality of it. All right, so we'll dive in, and this is a little bit different of a format for the regular listeners. A lot of times we tend to have our minds made up on a player take or where we want to take the topic. We've kind of got the table set to look back on these, but there's going to be some freestyling on the fly.
I mean, our rundowns, usually it's just like a list of 12 players, which is fine, but
it's great.
This is
our bread and butter.
This is totally different.
It is different. Yeah. So we're jumping in the time machine way back to April 2nd when, you know, spring was in the air. We were watching every single at bat. And it was, I think, our first episode since the season had begun. And the show topic was what you should care about in one weekend and kind of looking basically at early season observations. Now, for that, we were basically saying, as we do every year, that it's overreaction season and it's too quick to look at anything around, you know, surface stats or barrel rate, as, you know, things haven't stabilized yet, basically. But the stuff that has the bigger denominator, which you've called out, Steve, that tends to be the stuff we look at in a handful of these early season shows. So for this one weekend, it was really looking at bat speed changes for hitters and then velocity gainers for pitchers or pitchers who added a pitch mix. And there's kind of a theme throughout our whole season, which I don't know about you, Steve, but it surprised me. I know he's a name that's easy to talk about, especially how loud the production's been this year. But PCA popped up in like three or four of our episodes early on. And he didn't really like light the world on fire from a results standpoint the way that he eventually did throughout the rest of the year. But PCA was a really big one. And then a name we just talked about last week, Liam Hicks, which he did have some loud production early on, but we assessed and basically said, this is encouraging that some of the swings of the bat speed had picked up. And for a guy like Liam Hicks, I was actually just listening to it in my car tonight, which is always funny. Like, let's go listen to ourselves from 5 months ago, talking about how Liam Hicks was like a cellar dweller on bat speed, or like 20th percentile up to like 50th percentile. We're like, oh, well, now at least he's middle of the road and he's had three home runs as well. And what we ended up finding is Hicks wasn't this Cal Raleigh type of homer production, but the hit tool was great. Mm-hmm. So like, I think an early lesson for these just on the hitter side was that Michael Harris, another one, some of those bat speed gains, I think you're allowed to get excited about that. Yeah. I know you can't look at it in a complete vacuum, but some of those names, and there were misses, a little bit of misses there too. So you have to look at the process, because I know a guy like Matt McClain was one that we were like, he lit the world on fire with spring training, but then he started out ice cold. His bat speed was still up. So maybe you have to accept that you might hit on, you know, two and miss on one. But overall, I think first week of April next year, I'm totally endorsing that as a helpful show, right?
I think you're maybe giving us too much of a haircut or a discount on the PCA takes. He was on a lot of our early season rundowns, and we liked a lot about that. And he was
short-term memory loss,
dropped or traded for very, very cheap early in the season because people were panicking after the bad second half and the slow start, right? He really did not pick up the pace until the middle of May, maybe even a little bit later. And there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal today, I think, by Jamie Dimon, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal. I'll look it up when you riff here. But there were some adjustments he made to his stance that maybe we didn't pick up on, but there were some other things that we did. And I think we were sort of carrying a torch when a lot of people were out on PCA because they combined the slow start with the concerns from the second half. So I'll give us some credit there. But yeah, overall, like, this is a list that I'm pretty much buying. Like, the list of the seven names that we had was PCA, Liam Hicks, Matt McLean, Isaac Collins, Cam Smith, Michael Harris, and Jackson Merrill. It's really just like Matt McLean, Isaac Collins, and Cam Smith. And you know,
yeah, and we
Cam Smith and Matt McLean have been deep, usable at points. Isaac Collins, we qualified that as an extremely deep league take, right? So
yeah,
overall, like, if we were just looking at guys that were rostered, like, every single one of these guys we pretty much wanted. I know Merrill took a while, but it was still there, and I think our position was that, okay, he looks healthy now. And even during his poor production months overall, he was still providing homers and speed. So I'd still tend to count that one as a W, and think this is definitely going to be something that we look at early in the season next year.
Yeah, and I think Merrill is right there with PCA, that it wasn't just the early bat speed, but it was also on the buy low hitters, because the bat speed was still there. Some of the batted ball data was up there. So I think that's a lesson learned too, that it's, you know, bat speed might take a minute to come around.
Or maybe we could sort of like, okay, is this guy healthy? You know, whoever we have a health concern with, like Jackson Merrill, you know, come off an injury riddled year, swing the bat harder. Great sign. Right.
Yeah.
You know, we could apply it to, you know, better refine who we choose to look at in the gainers list, and not just necessarily like, oh, automatically bat speed up, great. You know, there can be some sort of qualification and you know, eye test too, and human element that you can apply rather than just filtering a leaderboard, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And I think, it's a fair reminder and kind of the subtle victory lap that for how good PCA now has been on the season, right? 38 homers, 32 steals, a .280 batting average. Month of April, it was a .683 OPS, .237 batting average. Even in
people
May,
people were panicking.
.761.
People were panicking. Because the cost was still super high, and the second half was so bad last year.
Yeah, but it was not just the bat speed. It was also the whiffs were down. I know his chases were up, but we were kind of citing that, you know, bat speed with elite athleticism can afford to have some swing and miss in the game. Yeah. And I think that still holds true. On the pitching side of this, let's look at some of the topics on this. So pretty much we had fastball velocity as its own group, and Kodai Senga was a funny one. Now I was looking back at the time, but Steve, I was cracking up listening to it, because I was basically like, all right, Steve, take your victory lap. You were ahead of the industry, and you literally were like, I will not take a victory lap on April 2nd. It's a good sign that Senga is healthy. So you
and then he wasn't healthy,
caution,
you know,
and then he wasn't right. So, but I think that's the right idea. I do think it's still interesting that Dylan Cease, who ended up with, you know, an excellent, almost like Cy Young worthy year in terms of the line, and Dustin May, who it took a little bit of bumps in the road, but he ended up having basically a miniature breakout year. That they both had substantial velo jumps in the first week. Imanaga, you talked about health. He was on the list. Alcantara. And then there was, I guess when you look at some of the guys that we had listed for breaking ball velocity, where it was like Mike Burrows, Kevin Gausman, Imanaga, like maybe this exercise.
Yeah, I don't know if we necessarily care as much about that.
Right. And Liberatore, on the flip side of that, if you remember, he had that really strong spring. And I know we just talked about him on last episode as still being, you know, doing interesting things. But his velocity did come down in April from where it was sitting in spring. And Liberatore did not turn into some, you know, fantasy breakout. So I think basically speed wins early on would be like
For fastballs. For fastballs.
For fastball and for bat speed.
Like yes. That's, yes.
It's first week speed check is the idea. Which,
there we go. That's our, the, that's our, you got a show topic and a show name for next.
Yeah, shooting next radar. Season. Let's go. so that is episode 208. I can scan to see if there's anything else. I mean, there were certainly misses in there, but
I would just highlight for the pitch mix changers, like, you know, Sasaki. Maybe that wasn't the adjustment, but that he was tweaking, I think that was a good sign. Sandy Alcantara overall, I know there were some rough spots, you know, in April, May, and he got going really in the second half here.
Kyle
Harrison, definitely it was a good call there too.
Yeah. So I think worth noting, but velocity, it seems like is the primary indicator.
We could probably do a topic just on that based on, you know, our sort of postmortem analysis of that episode.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, so that was 208. So let's fast forward a week from then, a whole week, and get to April 9th. At this point, it's like matchup week three, and our chat back and forth, Steve's like, what do we want to talk about? It's got to be waiver wire, where this is the show where it's like, if you add a guy who pops on April 9th, you are getting so much production throughout the rest of the season. The flip side is, of course, giving up on other players too early, which is always the challenge. But pulling up this episode log, I think one that jumps out, which was so deep in terms of the roster ship, was Sean Burke, who was just 6% rostered. This was one that we had talked about in years past. We liked the extension. At the time, we thought the White Sox were not going to be a playoff picture team. It was only early April, and we were kind of joking and laughing at, like, who is in their rotation? They're going to need to get innings out of some of these guys. And Sean Burke is one that, if the strikeouts are truly a strikeout per inning, it looked like he really had got the walk rate in check and looked super productive with the big frame and everything. He was a follower at the time as well. So Sean Burke was a good one there. For what it's worth, on how he got on our radar, that was a guy who had some back of the baseball card production.
And he was,
to that point,
we talked about how he was hyped up heading into last season too.
So maybe a little bit of a post hype.
Yeah.
I think that's fair, because that would apply to Max Meyer, who was only 12% rostered at the time. And he was mid for those first couple outings. Yeah. But the slider still looked great in terms of swing and miss. Control was troublesome. And that was one that we were like, okay, let's watch it. And then I know personally, Steve, it took like one more really good start before I jumped in. Major bummer that Meyer got injured, because before he got injured, he was looking like, honestly, a top 25 pitcher with the production he was bringing. Maybe even better.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate that he's hurt again. It's a neck though this time, which is a little bit better. I know that is, you know, connected and everything, close to the arm and shoulder, and he's had that issues in the past. But you know, he was something that I drafted because he looked somewhat better in spring. It took a bit, and it was just like getting used to that adjustment coming back from that major hip surgery, and it paid off. It's now just a question, like, all right, is he ever going to be good enough to last the entire season? Because there are 3 month stretches where Max Meyer pitches like a top 20 pitcher. He just does not have the longevity to do so yet. He'll be discounted. I'll treat him like Chris Bubich, right? Like, I'll bank on his 3 great months till June, until he either, you know, gets hurt or proves that he could do it for longer. So, I still like Max Meyer for next year. Even he'll probably be discounted if he doesn't return this year, which doesn't look like he will.
I do too. And broader than the player itself, I think with Meyer, kind of like Burke, names that we liked in the past that were still young enough to make like meaningful improvements, But Meyer had changes as well. Like his sweeper usage had jumped from like 10% up to 25% or something crazy. And I think it's just a sign that even if the results don't look good, the swing and miss stuff looked good. So that's where I think some of those things early on, like pitch mix or swing and miss, can be more effective, are still very like effective tools in there.
What was Jordan Walker's rostership percentage? I know it's not on the notes here. I don't know if you listened and we mentioned it, but I'm curious as to what that was on April 9th.
I don't have it right in front of me, but what I want to go look at is, so, okay. In the March run of games, he already had homered, was hitting 294 with a 988. And so at this point, April, this would have been a full week of April after that, which was his eight homer month. I'm pretty sure, Steve, to be fair, now we did talk about him in the offseason, but I'm pretty sure how we positioned this was, all right, you're probably not going to be able to get Jordan Walker, but we got to start out by saying he looks like a priority add. So I guess what's the lesson learned on Walker, because he ended up being one of the like hallmark early ads of the entire year. We did talk about him going to Driveline in the off season. Yeah. Like, does this also fit into the post hype sleeper category?
When a guy with that much underlying quality of contact skill shows any stretch of results, run, don't walk to add them. You know, if Cam Smith next year comes out and pulls five fly balls in the first week of the season,
it's a sprint.
Yeah, yeah, don't question it. Some that we'll talk about. If Cal Raleigh, continues the hot stretch that he's on in September and late August, early next year, put in I don't know, bump them up around or something next year, right? Like,
just yeah, because Mark of that, Vientos, you know? Just like guys, that you guys that think are, in a way, you got to remember where we're at with Jordan Walker. He was still playing, but it seemed like a guy who you were no longer.
He probably wasn't projected for a starting role, like for the most part. Like, that's how he was drafted, basically.
Yeah, it was just because the Cardinals were in blow up mode. Yeah. It was like, why not? We'll see, but. I think a combination of Driveline, but honestly, like Sean Burke's a little different because Max Meyer and Jordan Walker both came up with the expectations.
I mean, they were
that
top
they
five
could light
picks,
the world
right?
on fire. Yeah. And Sean Burke, obviously nowhere near to that extent, but 6'6" pitcher that, 7 feet of extension. And it, like, he was on our radar prior to, I think in past years, Steve, we've talked about lessons learned as like it's a young man's game, but it's kind of also like bet on the tools in a way, and especially if tools match up with a narrative of something they've tweaked or changed. But I think overall, like when you look at both of these episodes combined, right, where if you're just talking about the waiver relevant ones, that would be Dustin May. It would be maybe a little bit of Roki Sasaki in the right league size. Granted, he had his ups and downs. Sean Burke, Jordan Walker, Max Meyer. Like, I think part of this story is still you want to be pretty twitchy on adding guys that have either like name or prospect pedigree paired with velo or bat speed or a notable change. Like, I still think it's worth swinging and missing on three of those if you hit one, because those are kind of league winners, right?
Be aggressive early on. That's the mantra there.
Yep.
And it was it's Jared Diamond at the Wall Street Journal who wrote on PCA, great article today on the stance adjustments that he had. So shout out there.
Yeah. That's a good one. Okay. So that is first 2 weeks of April, early season observations, the waiver show. We're going to take our first ad break, and we'll be back with our next one, which is hitter changes that matter in early season. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, just scooting on down to episode 210. on April 16th. So this now mid-April, but still not quite deep enough to get into like meaningful batted ball samples on barrel rate, anything like that. So we were looking at this might have been a stav sheet. Let me pull up the rundown.
Yeah, it was.
This was a great stav sheet where it was combining a handful of ingredients of chase rate, swinging strike rate, bat speed, all overlaid, which honestly, what a great like topic. Let's just cement that as one that we got to pull in next year, right?
For sure.
I mean, so because what things do you want? If everything we talked about on bat speed gets paired with plate discipline as it relates to swing and strike and chase. So some of the names we talked about, which there are a lot of names on this show, but some hits and misses. So the guys who were chasing less and had more contact were Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Terang, Riley Green, Luis Robert, who's out of a gig, Taylor Ward, then Willie Adames, Matt McClain. Miguel Vargas was a really interesting one. I briefly listened to this episode, Steve, just prepping for the pod, and popped over to the Vargas segment. At the time of this episode, he was hitting 176 or something. In our defense, it was like, man, he's built us up to let us down in the past, but he's only 26 years old. He could be a good, like, corner guy, right? He's still got that in him, and we had no idea he was about to. We were even talking about, like, who knows? He could get up to 20 home runs. Here he is, September 2nd, 29 homers, 13 steals. So you got to take your victory laps there, but at the same time, process-wise, there are a handful of misses in here, too. So that was one section. The next one was more power, less swing and miss. So this had bat speed gains and then the swing and strike rate improving. Mm-hmm. Freddie Freeman, Mike Trout, Matt McClain again on there. Brian Reynolds, Miguel Vargas, PCA, there he was. Lindor, who got injured kind of shortly after. So not a full fair crack. And then the next were Junior Caminero, Jackson Merrill, Colt Keith, Mark Vientos, Brenton Doyle, Cam Smith, Hunter Goodman. So thoughts here, Steve. It's kind of a mixed bag. It almost feels like a 50-50 hit rate, but as a topic, it seems pretty ironclad on the stuff that you want to be looking at 3 weeks into the season, right?
Yeah, and I mean, most 50-50 maybe. I mean, yeah, I guess Freddie Freeman's a little bit disappointed, Matt McClain, to get into that then, but pretty much everywhere else, like Lindor hurt, Cole Keith didn't really play much. Mark Vientos, I think I'm officially done with him. Goodman, Merrill, Caminero, PCA, Vargas, even Brian Reynolds, like Trout had a bit of a bounce back. Like a lot of these guys had really, really good years. I think this is overall a pretty good process.
Yeah, and I guess even I was looking at Reynolds. I mean, Reynolds had a bounce back comparison, I mean, it definitely seems like Father Time is starting to bounce him off of that 8 year stretch of being a 25 homer 280 guy. But it's just odd that other ones this early on, I guess it's just maybe a hot streak when you look at, I don't know, you're not even looking at that much data for like a Brenton Doyle. Yeah. So maybe those are so irrelevant.
Yeah. Tighten up our sample size there, broaden our sample size.
Yeah. For a guy like Colt Keith, I'm just kind of bouncing around. Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of middling for him being like a platoon guy. But you're right. I mean, a lot of them, if you remove kind of the injury frustrations, maybe these are good ones to be like buy lows as well. Yeah. Because for a guy
Hunter like Goodman Caminero, and Hunter Goodman and PCA. You know, Caminero, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, I think. Jackson and Merrill, too, right?
Right. And I wanted to see, I know Caminero had a big April, but did all those home runs, like when we did this show, Caminero was sitting at four homers. He had just gone back to back. So, I mean, I guess that was still at a time where, like, you maybe could have got him cheaper than what we now know is like a 900 OPS 37 homer guy. Mm-hmm. So it's early in the season to be trading, but I think a lot of these were hits. and then a few outliers. So good show topic on this one as well. Let me look at season change. So that was April. Then we kind of fast forward, because after that, Steve, we looked at barrel rate, which that one is kind of an interesting one, because a lot of those names were more just calling, where we talk about something's more of like a descriptive stat.
Yeah.
Like I think it's still worthy of talking about, but I don't know that those are as much like crystal ball ones.
I mean, I would say barrel rate's probably pretty predictive. Like, you know,
that's true. I mean, I guess
I think it's fair. I know we didn't have it in the rundown, but I think it's fair to run into it if we want. That's why we do it, you know. Barrel rate is more predictive of than a guy. So they did hit five home runs, right? If it was five home runs, that three just scraped the wall, right? It's almost less meaningful than someone that's running a 15% barrel rate after a 5% barrel rate the year before, you know?
Yeah, I guess honestly, it's one of the original
predictive
ones. What I was thinking is, I wonder how many of those their barrel rates were high because they were already on fire.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
South, I just pulled it up. I can drop it, because I know we're just kind of freestyling about. Drop this rundown in the in the Discord. But looking at episode 212 for barrel rate on April 30th, which was right when we got to the point of like 50 batted balls in play, like Sal Stewart at that point was already.
I see what you're saying. Like, it's more of like validation in a sense. Like, all right, Sal Stewart's legit, you know, like that's.
But there, it's kind of a mix of both. So McGonagall was another one that had a really loud start. But then you look right after McGonagall, we talked about Dylan Dingler, who at the time was hitting 247.
Yeah.
And his barrel rate was super high. And he went on to have a 26 homer year. Still, the batting average kind of held around there. Casey Schmidt was another one I know we talked about before we started rolling. Maybe not the overall line that it looked like his first half was kind of capable of, but still a pretty productive year at like 21 homers. Like, you know, there was probably a 5 or 6 week stretch where Casey Schmidt was one of the best guys on my roster for a home league.
You're telling me.
So interesting name. Yeah. And he was one that at the time I'm pretty sure he was like 9% rostered, you know? Just keep looking down this list. What's kind of interesting is Spencer Steer popped up on a ton of these shows, and he just kind of was ho-hum at the end of the day. I know that's kind of the nature of the Spencer Steer experience, but some of these guys tend to be on here. Like Elliot Ramos is another one that it seems like he's always up on, you know, pitcher list, like leaderboards and swing acceleration and stuff. But maybe some of those names, again, like, is Elliot Ramos one? He's not quite, doesn't quite come with the buzz of Jordan Walker in terms of the history, but he could be one that, like, if the bat speed gets even higher next year and he's got four homers in the first week, that might be like a don't wait till May to grab a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, Spencer Steer, to give, like, it's the best barrel rate of his career by like 4 points. It's the best hard hit rate of his career by like 5 points. He despite having a 12% barrel rate, his homer to fly barrel rate is just at 15%. Like, he's having essentially the same year as last year, but he's doing a lot more things better.
A lot of things
better. So, like,
I guess to be fair to him, so pretty much the last 3 years, Spencer Steer has averaged 21.5 home runs per season. That's been with an average of 152 games.
Yeah.
He's at 16 and 90.
And 98, yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So on a rate basis. Yeah. There you go. Yep.
So, Steer is kind of projecting out at one of his best, like, power outputs. Yeah. So I think that's fair. And as a 28-year-old, maybe we should
seems like he'll be a great it's early talking, but this is a great deep, you know, this is going to be a he's played outfield and where else has he played this season? He's played first base, he's played second base. Yeah, he's going to be an NFBC darling next year.
Yeah, the other thing is, in terms of like he sits against lefties every now and then. Yeah. It last year against lefties, a 229 average, 727 OPS.
And he's this on year, the IL right now. He's on the IL.
This year, 342 average against lefties with a 1062 OPS. Yeah. So he's kind of weird, but then he's just been struggling versus righties. Yeah, he's an interesting interesting use case. But yeah, I guess to be fair, the barrel show could have been on this rundown before we just chucked it on.
Should have been
because I think it's a fair topic to keep coming back to, and it's totally valid. All right, so that was end of April. We get to May, and now we are looking at buy lows on May 14th. So this was basically what you might say is kind of a hallmark episode for our calendar year, Steve.
Yeah,
because it's got probably the best data points on buying a dip versus trying to just justify a player that's like on the extreme decline. But our lead in was talking about like trade season, who to buy back on, and naturally buy lows are going to be like bigger ticket names. So I guess give me the lesson learned, because we let off with Fernando Tatis Jr., who's been one of like the ultimate roller coasters this year. And I know you've been on the coaster. So talk about what we talked about on this episode and what kind of lesson learned you might take away from the Tatis Jr. run that we had this year.
So this is silly, but if you traded for Fernando Tatis on
May 13th. Okay.
You got an 868 OPS, 298 average, 19 homers, and 21 stolen bases. I traded for Fernando Tatis on May 6th, so a week before that.
Nice.
So, and look, to be fair, it was a struggle for most of May, and even with June, like his June wasn't that great.
But at that time, he had four home runs. At the time of our show, he was at a 245 batting average, so it was definitely a bummer.
So for me, here's the hard part, right? Because maybe his numbers weren't as bad right now, like he was being buoyed by average and OBP. Like Vlad Jr. is also a similar call. Like the lesson is okay. You know what I was about to say is like, okay, a big name like that, you just hold your nose and trade for him. The next two guys on our list are probably examples why, and maybe Vlad Jr., why that may not be the case. And there's still some downside, but you know, I also think for Vlad, there's been like on and off back injuries all year. Like he's talked about him, like, you know, taking hundreds of swings. Like he's clearly not there mentally, but at the same time, the same thing was said about Tatis, right? Like of him, you saw him working with Manny Machado out in the early season, like Steven Souza getting snippy with the press, the Padres hitting coach, right? Being clearly like upset when asked about when the homer was coming, like he didn't know when it would come, right? Like, so some of those things apply too. So it's not as simple as just, okay, yeah, just buy whatever superstar player is struggling in May. And it's also not going to be as bad as what Tatis was doing and have zero home runs through Memorial Day. But
well, part still, of your,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, part of your discussion for Tatis, the case for Tatis, aside from just the, it's Fernando Tatis, he's going to come around, is he was still hitting balls extremely hard. There was the singular issue of like launch angle and the batting stance and all that was kind of weird. I think Gunner, you mentioned the next two names, which were Gunnar Henderson and Cal Raleigh. Mm-hmm. I think Gunner is a really tough one to discern from Tatis because he was still hitting the hell out of the ball. He was still running on the base paths and
still had like
hitting homers. So if you would have told us at the time, you know, do both of these guys bounce back for the same reasons, we would have said yes. Mm-hmm. Gunners ended up just being like okay.
And the metrics have been just okay too, right? It's very much not a Gunner season.
No, it's not at all.
And last year you heard about the shoulder that was hurt in spring, right? And he came back from. You haven't heard anything about that just yet. Like, but his metrics last year with that shoulder injury, at least the average exit velocity and the hard hit rate were better, which is strange. And the barrel rate is exactly the same. 8.6% last year for 46th percentile, 7.1% this year for 46th percentile. Like, crazy. All right.
We need to look at something here. I'm going to go to Gunner's hard hit rate month over month. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was better when we were looking at this. So, that's what makes this hard.
And Tatis was different because, like, better.
It was literally that open stance that, like, every, you know, semi-analyst was like, you know, go back to that. He finally went back to it. It worked.
Yeah.
You know, whereas with Gunner and Vlad, it's like, okay, is this just who they are now?
Gunner is a deeper case, but to paint the example, we did the show mid-May. In April, Gunnar Henderson's barrel per batted ball event was 11.4%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In May, 8.7%.
Yeah.
In June, 3.4% barrel rate.
There's got to be some sort of...
And it just stayed down there in single digits. So in our defense, a little bit,
yeah,
there was a collapse that came after the show that maybe the symptoms weren't there. Now, if you flip to Cal Raleigh, the reason I brought that up is Cal Raleigh, we were trying to kind of justify it with no path at all. Like our rundown notes on Cal Raleigh being a buy low was the bat speed is down. He's chasing more, making more contact outside of the zone, which is a bad combo. Like you don't want to burn your swings reaching outside of the zone. So like if your buy low case is basically bolstered by all things that are just like, yeah, you don't see how it could get better, but it's got to, right? Then I don't know if that means you like drop him. I mean, when in reality, outside of Cal Raleigh coming around a little bit, you actually would have been better going to a Liam Hicks or another catcher. But maybe you could try to trade some of those guys you kind of go down with the ship on. Like I remember thinking that with like Rafael Devers, you know what I mean? But I do think there's a difference in the case for what that snapshot of Gunner and Lindor or Gunner and Tatis was versus Cal Raleigh, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in on Cal Raleigh next year. Like, there's not that much different than what he was doing the year before. Yeah, sure. Like the overall exit velocity and the whiff rate that slightly improved and the chase rate that slightly improved last year is back down again, but still got good bat speed, still got a great barrel rate. I project him as a 220, 35 homer catcher next year.
Yeah. I want to do one more, Steve, going to Ronald Acuna, because he was another one at the time of the show. Mm-hmm. It felt like, man, if you could get a manager who would be willing to sell low on Acuna, you're in great shape. Mm-hmm. He had things that we were pointing to that were encouraging. And I guess, you know, maybe it's kind of like the Gunner thing is, his hard hit percent in May was 53%. In June, it went down to 29%. July, 41%. So, you know, maybe it was just he ended up struggling to a point that he wasn't struggling in mid-May, but it's just a head scratcher to me. I mean, I guess there was the hamstring injury was sprinkled in there, so maybe you chalk it up to that. But it's just crazy to see such a down year for Acuna. I mean, he was kind of a league loser for a lot of guys that invested, right?
Yeah, you're looking at one of them. It's hard with the injuries. Like, it's one thing like to have a year like last year where it's like, all right, yeah, he was injured, but then he came back and he was Ronald Acuna. This year, he was injured, and when he was on the field, he was not Ronald Acuna. You know, sure, the 13 homers and the 19 steals and the 378 plate appearances, you know, you want to give him in the full season 22 homers, 30 steals. Yeah, that's okay, but that's not what you're hoping for from Ronald Acuna. And also the fact of, when does he play a full season? Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough. That being said, like, I think he'll be drafted at, he'll be priced at a discount next year. He should be healthier. There's no World Baseball Classic. He plays, even though he doesn't play a lot of major league games, like, he plays a ton of winter league ball. Like, I'm hoping that he doesn't do that this off season, and sort of prioritizes being available and being on the field. And then we could see what happens, like, cause his underlying, his metrics aren't, they're down, but they're not like, whoa, like, is this the end for Ronald Acuna? Sure. Sort of down. Right. As I, try to load up his Savant page here. Like, it's not super bright red MVP Acuna, but it's still good, right? The bat speed's still elite. The barrel rate's still really good. The hard hit rate's still in there. Yeah, the K rate is down from that MVP season, but it's still, you know, a palatable 24%. Still walking, doesn't chase. Like, there's still a lot. Like, there's not much to improve for him to being all bright red in all the areas that we expect him to be. It's not like a Gunnar Henderson fall off, right? There's still a lot here.
And he dealt with, the hamstring.
Yeah,
in the middle
and with players like this, like, you see it with Tatis, right? It takes one of those superstar months, and then there you go. You have the bright red pages for the entire year, right? Yeah. And when you're battling injuries and on and off and have a hamstring injury, go on the IL, come back, finally get in the groove, go in the IL again with the same hamstring injury, like, that's what leads to sort of lost seasons.
Yeah, it's fair. You know, it's maybe once every 2 years we make a fantasy football reference, but with my draft last night, Steve, it feels like kind of a Christian McCaffrey, Acuna. Yeah, like it's that. He could be your out and out league winner 1 year, and you could guess wrong on the wrong year. But to quickly get through the rest of the buy lows, because it was just such an interesting show. The next one we talked about was PCA. So again, this is like the third instance in a row where we were saying improved bats.
We deserve credit.
Yeah, the PCA, we were all over it. I wish personally I would have been a little more actionable.
Dude, he got traded in my league for, I think, Nico Horner.
Oh my gosh, dude. Can you imagine? But then a couple other ones. We had marked that Bo Bichette was the third unluckiest hitter to the at that point in the season through May. So
I chalked it April, up as a win.
Yeah, in April he hit .260, in May he hit .207, June .321, July .275, August .290.
Yeah.
So he still hasn't turned into like prime Bo Bichette, but for what you were kind of
if you acquired him in the middle of May or the end of May, you got perfectly sort of what you expected from Bo Bichette.
And then one that I had thrown on and added in was Corey Seager, who is another head scratcher of like, what do you make of it? The power never got there. Like, his overall line is like, oh my gosh, .223 and 13 homers. But second half of the year, you had to wait because he was on the IL for a while. But second half of the year is a .295 average and .837 OPS. So overall, I think the buy low show, it's like, there might be a Cal Raleigh where you're just kind of throwing your arms up and saying it has to get better, or a Gunner where they continue to spiral down. But there's a lot on here that was like, you would have done a huge service to your team if you reached out and grabbed these guys on May 15th.
Process was very good for these shows. You know, even if you did miss, you probably should have tried to acquire all these guys.
Yep. Okay, so we'll take our second ad break. We got one more bit after this, and then broad lessons learned. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, we've talked through a handful at this point. That was buy low hitters. And then the show right after that, we jumped to under the radar starting pitchers. So this was May 21st, and looking at overall, it was basically looking at a handful of guys that were either producing well quietly, like bigger names who were quietly productive, or a handful of names that were just flying low. And we felt like, you know, this point of the season, mid-May, it's already pretty picked over in terms of the waiver guys. So that was actually our working title for the show, is Waiver SPs in the Wasteland. So some funny names looking back on here, because you got like Griffin Jacks, Ben Brown, Zach Gallen, that we kind of acknowledged at the time was like, you know, I think he had finally had one good start. Zebby was in there, Anthony Kay. So these were like super deep options in terms of what to find. One that we did talk about was Troy Melton, Reed Detmers. Those were ones that you would call hits. Drew Rasmussen, who is like widely owned, but one that we were basically breaking down like just how good he's actually been. Handful of misses though as well, Steve, that admittedly they were super deep ones, right? When you're talking about an Anthony Kay, Brandon Sproat, what do we make of this kind of like, I know it's a tough exercise of, if you're looking at SPs that are like under 20% rostered, with the exception of like, you know, Rasmussen that we mentioned, what can you ever find value with guys like those? Like, I guess what's our takeaway from how many of these low roster guys just didn't really turn out to be that effective?
I think we are really digging. We are really dumpster diving here.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, and Jackson Brown and even Kay and Rocker to an extent, maybe later on for those two.
That's true.
Still provided deep league value. But for as nice as it would be to find guys like a Drew Anderson that was 1% rostered at the time, Zebby Matthews, 26% rostered at the time, Brandon Sproat, 7% rostered at the time, like, it's hard. And you maybe you don't want to fit a square peg into a round hole a little bit here. But that being said, you know, Ben Brown, Jax, those were really, really nice finds at the time.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of stream for a little while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that a broader picture lesson learned for me was, and I kind of want to pull up the player rater on pitchers, because there were a few that one of my lessons learned was like moving on too soon from certain pitchers. Like, I mean, we just talked about Sean Burke. I actually dropped him. Then he went off and some manager like dropped him prematurely when he had one bad start, and I picked him back up, which was helpful for me. But another one was like Cade Cavalli.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if part of the process, like Foster Griffin was another one that we like talked about early in the season. I'm trying to find some of these guys, and Melton was productive, but were there any of those kind of mid-season emerged as an excellent option that we just kind of missed from a season standpoint, or was it just,
I mean, that's pitching? Cavalli, I think is a really good one. Just looking at like all pitchers,
Ian Seymour popped up and had some merit, kind of up and down.
I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez, I think maybe qualifies there.
I don't know. I guess my point is like in the past where it seems like there's a June, July, August, like at least some pop-up pitchers mm-hmm. that become really useful.
Was there not that many this year, right? I mean, Cavalli is really, like, really the biggest one to me.
Right. And even Cavalli, like yeah. I'm pretty sure I was rostering him in like May. So when when you get to like the mid later months, it's just kind of hard.
There's
to find
been some
any.
Weird, like Noah Cameron's had like a great run here. Okay.
Some of the Cardinals guys.
Yeah.
Like
Logan Henderson.
And,
I think Logan Henderson may count for that. It was his first start in May, and then he came up for good in July. I would say Logan Henderson's a good one. Who else there? Taj Bradley has an up and down season, been great recently, right? And has sort of salvaged the season after not being rosterable. Nick Martinez has quietly been really good, but that's been more of a year all year type of thing. So I get your point that there really hasn't been these guys came up in May.
Right. And I just wonder if it's kind of the broader trend of the industry, and we've talked about it, that like we all know the pitchers, including a lot of our like league mates. I'm not talking about like TGFBI. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like home league. We all know the pitcher sleepers as deep as like 250, 300. So in a way there's so much more work to be done in the first 6 weeks of the season with scrounging on pitchers or even in the draft room, and maybe having a little bit more patience before you move on from one that looks truly effective. Like if somebody gives you signs of life, like we talk about the game log process, Cavalli had like a 10 strikeout game and then had another like really solid game. And then there were a couple
clunkers,
middling starts. Yeah. And I bet I dropped him for like flippant, oh, I'd love to grab this guy, you know, where you're just like,
this
you
guy's
make
facing,
a move.
You know, the Pirates, whoever, what, I don't know, the Marlins today, you know?
Right. And just what a stupid decision that was for me, because then I was like, oh my gosh, he's been that good for the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. And now I got to hear about how we got to take him seriously as like a bona fide low threes ERA guy. So,
his ERA popped up to 4.15. After a start against Minnesota on May 5th.
I think that's probably what it was. Because where was the game log in April?
The two games before that, he had 10 strikeouts. In
10 strikeouts. Yeah. So just because he follows up two 10-strikeout outings, giving up three earned runs, two earned runs, and only has two or four strikeouts, he's already demonstrated he's got that like big game ability. Mm-hmm. And how much better of pitchers are you finding in May and June than somebody that's like a bird in the hand? So
it wasn't necessarily
one of our episodes, but I think that's just like a broader lesson learned that guys who you believe in that you draft, or even like our very first episode on of the playing season on April 2nd, we had Dustin May there. Mm-hmm. He got added a bunch, he got dropped a bunch, and then by the time we were in August, we were like, oh, Dustin May is one of the more promising names. Now, he's had his blow-ups with the Brewers, but there were some months in there where he was helping you way more than most guys on the wire. Mainly like, May, June, when he was well over a strikeout an inning, sub four. So, I don't know. Just pitching is way harder on the waiver wires, obviously. It is.
It really is. Kate Cavalli doesn't go unrostered. Like I look to see, okay, when was he dropped in my home league? He was not. Like he was rostered all year, rightfully.
Yeah. And then there's even like a Kyle Harrison, right? That's obviously had a worse second half, but he's in the first half was like vaulting managers up the standings, and he was a name that probably would have been gone because where was his ADP was 432, but everybody knew the pitcher, and then he was scooped up, you know, in the first week or so I guess not to be a broken record, but I think all you might learn most of the pitching landscape in the first 6 weeks. Yeah. 4-6 weeks of the season.
Pay attention to that velocity and pitch metrics early in the season, and then go from there.
Pounce on it. Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff. Any big picture takeaways as you look at this whole list, Steve? Before we wrap,
I think we have some pretty good topics. You know, like we said, we're not going to have every single take correct, but I feel comfortable with how we approach these episodes.
Yeah.
Which is nice, and that's what we want to be doing.
Yep, I dig it. All right, well, thank you guys for tuning in, and feel free to shoot us any feedback. Like we said, this is fun to look back in the rear view, even when it stings at times, but plenty of good shows, good hits, and informs us for how we want to structure going into next year. But until next week, good luck for those of you guys who are still grinding. Steve, good luck in TGFBI. Thanks. As you kind of close out, although it seems like you got a ceiling there. And yeah, beyond that, I appreciate you guys joining us as always. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Yeah, thanks for listening to the September, guys. Really appreciate it. Later.